This is the October 9 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Shane Holtorf. He's at Logic Ag Market out of Alta, Iowa. Colin Waters joins us from the Illinois Corn Growers Association in Bloomington. And Mike Zuzlow is here from GlobalComResearch.com. He is in Atchison, Kansas. Do visit our website where you can sign up for the Farm Assets Conference today. It's a part of the Farm Doc team's winter meeting season, and it will be held next to ICGA at the Agri Center in Bloomington this year on Friday, December the 12th. Colin Waters, in fact, will be on one of the panels discussing logistics and new uses as well for corn. Colin, thank you for doing that. Let's start with you today. I'd like to know what's on your list of items that we should talk about. And I'll bet the Mississippi River is there.
Yeah, that's right, Todd. You know, I think the last time that we spoke, I was fairly optimistic with, you know, where the at least the weather forecast was. I guess I was probably back at Farm Progress Show. I was wrong. Basically the drought has really really affected water levels on the Mississippi. That said, the recent rain kind of in the Ohio Valley definitely helped, but we're still under restrictions moving southbound and northbound.
Is there anything else on your list we should discuss today?
I would maybe just throw out, you know, the government shutdown is going to impact, you know, the publicly available data. So that's something that's out there as well. That's kind of adding a little bit more uncertainty into the situation.
Mike Zuzlow, on your list?
Yeah, two things, Todd, that really, I think, came into focus on Thursday with the Mideast peace plan is we've got two very large geopolitical extremes building here. One being the Middle East peace plan, phase one, what it does with the crude oil and dollar and therefore commodities. And then it seems like as we get closer to the APEC meeting and the U.S.-China negotiations and bilateral meeting between the two presidents, we're getting a framework developed here as far as how things are looking as we get towards the end of the month with these two largest economies of the world.
We will take those up in just a bit. And Shane Holtorf, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, on my mind is probably what's happening out in the fields, conversations that we've had with farmers on the yields, maybe versus some expectations, as well as just, you know, the strong export demand that we've seen on the corn side over the last 60 days here.
Let's start with yields in your area. I know you are a farmer and you've been in the field. Lots of concern in Iowa from every place else in the country as it's related to southern rust, I think from Iowa farmers too. What have you been hearing and finding?
Yeah, so it's been interesting. The southern rust was definitely real. So I'm one that I apply fungicide pretty early on my farm, and it definitely snuck up on me this year from the latter part of the fall or latter part of the summer. That when the southern rust really came in, it took the top end off of my crop. And, you know, chatting with farmers, you know, a bulk of our customers are in western Iowa. We stretch to Wisconsin, Minnesota, South Dakota. You know, the big conversation that we've had with guys is yields are good, but they're not meeting their expectations that maybe that they had laid out for them in July and August. So I'm probably going to be right at my crop insurance APH, maybe a touch above it on the corn side. Seems to be the flavor for a lot of guys. There's been some really exciting yields. You can move a mile down the road and find a really, really disappointing yield. We're seeing 120 to 150 bushels of variability on the corn side, which is just insane to even think about.
Do you think that USDA in its last report, of course, there was supposed to be one on this date that we're recording, Thursday, the 9th day of October, that did not take place. But in September, they put the corn yield at 186.7. Is the national yield higher or lower than that at this point?
You know, I'm going to lean towards lower. You know, I don't know if it will be by much, you know, but you know, we start to shave a bushel or two off here or there and keep our strong export demand, and all of a sudden things to continue to get tighter. But I just look at, you know, the gradual feel from folks from the field. You know, the last couple of years, you could feel the excitement. You know, it's our third record crop in a row. You know, you'd have a ton of those conversations, and they're just not there this year. And I think those were the conversations that were going to have to take place to reach this lofty yield expectation that we had out there.
And Mike Zuslow, from your clientele across the breadth of the Midwest, what are you hearing?
Yeah, I'm feeling the exact same way, Todd. I mean, it seems to me that anecdotally, at least at this level, especially Eastern Corn Belt or east of the Mississippi River, Central and Eastern Corn Belt, there, a lot of the guys are finished up on beans at this point, and they came in very, very good. And I know there are some 50s, and then there's some really bad talk down south of US 50, down by Alney and on farther south. But there are patches of really bad beans, but it seems like it's a lot easier to find conversations where that great big corn crop is just not there like was thought 45 days ago. And so it seems to me that that's kind of where we're headed, and maybe the trade will pick up on that. We'll have to be watching the spreads, and we'll have to be watching the cash basis now that we've gone dark. Even the export sales on Thursday were not released now this week. So we're going to be a dearth of information to be able to, you know, see where we're headed as far as both demand and supply.
Colin Waters, does the Illinois Corn Growers Association get updated information as it's related to what yields across the country might be? And more importantly, I might ask it this way. While farmers are not looking forward to the exceptional crop they thought they had in late July, early August, is it really that much smaller than what USDA gave us in September?
Yeah, that's a that's a million-dollar question. I think that at least, you know, most of the information that I have is very anecdotal. And, even when USDA came out with those really big numbers, I think there was a lot of skepticism, you know, that it was even possible, right? And this is, you know, coming on the heels of some big crops. So I think, definitely the, you know, the July, August, the discrepancy between the two in terms of the weather. I mean, August was just, it really took the top end out of this crop, I think. But I think that most of the folks that I've talked to didn't necessarily believe it to begin with. So, I don't know if their expectations are now tempered a little bit. But I would say, you know, on the soybean side, I have heard some fairly positive news. Guys who weren't expecting it to have much of a crop at all, they, you know, it made it through. So, it's incredibly variable. You know, like in southern Illinois, it was really kind of catastrophic. Central Illinois seems to be doing okay, but I wouldn't bet on another record right now.
Shane, what did you have for a soybean harvest, and how is it going out in your area?
Yeah, so the soybean harvest, it's kind of interesting where I'm at. Calhoun County is where I farm. So if you start in the northwest corner of the state, count four counties down, four counties over is where I sit. And we've never been exceptional soybean farmers here. So if you could catch the low 60s from year to year, you know, that was really good. And this year in Calhoun County, soybeans were mid to upper 60s, even some low 70s. But if you go west to Buena Vista, where my office sits at Alta, you know, those guys are known for growing 75 to 80 bushel beans year in, year out. And they're also in the mid 60s. And so it kind of leveled the playing field, so to speak, in some of these northwest Iowa counties. Instead of the big producers, they kind of fell down to where everyone else was at. So it's kind of interesting with that data. And you know, it's interesting, we also sell crop insurance, so you start to get some of these reports come in. And what I've kind of found is, the big yields were talked about really early on. And when we wrapped up soybean harvest, we were harvesting 8% beans. And so, you know, you lose some yield there as well.
It'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. Have the North Dakota, South Dakota soybeans not moving out the PNW had much of an impact on your local basis for soybean?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we've got a new crush plant, soybean crush plant right now, and they had talked very heavily about railing some beans in September. Don't think it ever got done. They got very, very aggressive at the start of bean harvest on basis. So we were looking at a 40 under, and then it shut off to a 70 under, even 75 under there for a little bit. And now I see they've snapped it back to a 50 under. And so very quickly, basis got wide. And now I think they're starting to realize that maybe it's not out there, and they've starting to pull it back in.
Mike, are you hearing the same thing about basis across the western part of the nation?
Yeah, I am. And in fact, one of the things that reason I brought up Alney was I noticed that Alney went from about 33 under in soybeans to 20 under just today, and now 15 over on the corn. And so I think it really goes with what Colin was talking about with the variability. We're still stuck at 75 under on soybeans. I think we're certainly feeling the heat, so to speak, from the northern plains. Some have talked about today on the end of the week here, Todd, that the Pacific Northwest was bouncing a little bit. Not seeing it in the Dakotas yet. One of the key areas I look at, North Dakota, still at 155 under, still being talked about that they're going to have a hard time finding a place to sell soybeans. I would say, based upon last weekend's drive, I've never seen in 12, 13, 14 years being out here in northeast Kansas, going across the border into northwestern Missouri, never seen the amount of bags being used and how much is being set aside on the edge of fields this fall. So while I think our yields are on the top end here in this part of Kansas, and I think you don't have to go very far to see some weaker yields, but certainly feeling the pinch of the issues with what's going on with the Chinese demand.
Why do you think that Olney's bids are closing up at this point? I don't know. Are they close enough to the Ohio River that's what's happening, or is it something else in the area?
I think it goes back to maybe what Colin was talking about, where the commercials prepared for a big, big crop. And now that they're in the crop, the producers down there never really believed it was happening. And you don't have to go too far south of Alney. I've seen text messages of producers saying that they're baling their soybeans instead of cutting them. They're using them for, it's essentially straw. And the same would be for the corn. That August heat, overnight heat, really took a hit on terms of not just what we were hearing from our gentleman in Iowa about the low 8% soybeans, but also the kernel depth on the corn. So I think the reality of the cash basis is starting to set in with versus what USDA was suggesting. I'm going to have a hard time staying above 184 on corn. I think I can stay above 53 on beans at this point, but it's going to be hard for me to stay above 184 nationally on corn from what I'm hearing and seeing.
Tell me about the Mississippi River, Colin, as you see it and its flow at the moment, what constriction that has on the marketplace.
Yeah, so the current restrictions, I believe that below or at Memphis, the restriction is 11 feet. So it's, you know, it's not nearly as bad as it has been, you know, just, I guess, was that in 22 when, you know, it was a 9-foot restriction. But it's still, you know, it definitely doesn't help, right? Any time that you restrict the size of the tows or it's the number of barges in the tow, you basically just increase the cost of that product to the to export. I guess the short version is that it's not as bad as it could have been, but I guess I'm not going to go out on a limb this time and make any weather predictions, because it's looking like it could still be dry here for the next few weeks, and this is going to be potentially more problematic.
Shane, you wanted to talk about the export market, I think, as it was related to corn as opposed to soybeans. But if you could address what your concerns or your look forward to great things to happen might be.
we've seen very, very strong export demand in the last 60 days on the corn side. And, you know, beans have, you know, they've been less than oppressive. I think everyone's just waiting on China. And that's the number one focus that was, you know, alluded to earlier in the conversation, is sitting on the heels of these trade talks with China. But, you know, one thing that I like to talk about with folks is, global demand is still global demand, and while it feels good to have China buy our beans, they're misplacing buyers in South America that are going to come to us. And if you take a look, you know, we're just, for round figures, call it $15 a ton cheaper than South America, and on corn and 40 on beans. You know, we're the essentially the low cost producer in the world right now, and so I think that the corn demand is very, very good right now, and I look for it to stay very good. And I think that beans, you know, there's a reason that we're the lowest price, and that's because we've got to spur a little bit of demand here, and I think we're going to do it at these prices. And if we can get a trade deal put together, all the better.
Mike Zuzlow, if you would talk about the APEC framework that you have been watching develop, how do you think that will impact the marketplace? And you can discuss corn along the way, too.
Yeah, I mean, broad brushing it and following up with what Shane talked about, I think I'm most concerned with the idea that we probably in the trade, the futures trade, have not gotten it through our minds yet, Todd, that we probably are not going to get anything with China anytime soon. And this week, it seemed as though, unfortunately, that was the directional mindset that we saw both from the U.S. side and the Chinese side. U.S. put on fresh sanctions for Chinese firms buying Iranian oil. China turned around and said, okay, we're going to go ahead and make a move and restrict even more the rare earth mineral exports. And after that happened, President Trump had a cabinet meeting on Thursday afternoon. The Secretary of Agriculture made headlines saying that we were going to go ahead and get something out to producers because of their losses and the hurt they're feeling right now, but it won't be until after the government opens back up again. So that kind of answered that question to the market as far as what we were waiting for, and we're going to have to wait until the government opens up. President Trump, I think, made a bigger piece of news, though, when he said he wants to discuss soybeans with President Xi, but maybe we'll have to stop importing massive amounts from China to get his attention, essentially. So we're going the wrong direction, and I wish that we would turn our attention more towards the domestic side, the biofuel side, and really work harder on insulating ourselves from China. Because to what Shane was talking about earlier, I agree with him 100%. We're a lot cheaper than Brazil right now on beans, but we are seeing a barter system set up between China and Brazil. We're seeing record numbers of EV cars from China being sent into Brazil and essentially paying for the soybeans without having to pay in U.S. dollars. And I think that's the issue, not just now, but heading into 2026. And because we're dark from the government shutdown, it makes, to me, the November 25 delivery process at the end of this month extremely important, in that either the cash market's too cheap because the yields are low, and what we've been talking about here on the program, or the futures market's too expensive and needs to come down because it hasn't reconciled itself with the lost demand yet. And yeah, we're only down, 15-17% versus last year in overall soybean exports. But we also have a bigger crop being grown right now starting in Brazil. So I'm watching 25 beans for the idea maybe I should get some more hedges on in 26 as we get closer to $11, if we can pop that number again.
Colin Waters, that tees you up for the government shutdown. You wanted to talk about, I don't know whether it was on those issues that Mike addressed, but you can tell me what you're thinking.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's already been mentioned, you know, we've missed out on some export sale reporting. The WASD was supposed to be out today. That kind of lack of information is not very helpful. I guess that's probably the nicest way to put it. I'm optimistic, I guess, that they'll be able to broker a deal and get through the politics of the shutdown here soon and kind of get everything back on track. In terms of the potential government payments that would be going out. I definitely understand there's a lot of folks that are in a world of hurt right now, and anything would be helpful. But I think that what Mike had mentioned is really, really important. Long term, we need strong demand if we're going to improve prices, right? We will keep growing more and more corn, beans, whatever, and we need stronger markets, whether it's export or domestic. It really doesn't matter. So, I think that there could be some light at the end of the tunnel on biofuels. I don't know if the political climate is right for them to work out a deal for higher blends of ethanol in the real near term. But I think that probably is maybe more beneficial to the on the soybean side of the ledger. But having government kind of out to lunch indefinitely, it really doesn't help anybody.
Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, Colin, this week talked about when Congress comes back after a settlement is made and they have to attack how funding of any kind of payments to producers might need to be funneled into USDA because there's not enough money at CCC at the moment to pull that off. Also, including E15, which is what you just mentioned, as it's related to higher blends. You don't think that's really in the works, that E15 can be bundled in with those as a way to help producers out across the Midwest?
Oh, I think that anything is possible. I just don't know how likely that is right now. There's obviously when you're talking about the fuel market, it's there's a lot of interested parties that have nothing to do with farm country, right? So, I think that it's certainly within the realm of possibility. I just don't know that I'd bet on it right now.
Shane Holtorf, I want to come back to you as you were talking about soybeans, corn too. You were talking about being the least cost producer on the planet, actually about the least cost availability on the planet. However, it appears that China is now certainly not going to buy for the 2025 calendar year. They'll turn their attention, of course, to Brazil in 2026. Do you suppose they can manage to get through to next fall easily enough without purchasing U.S. soybeans?
Yeah, I certainly think that they've gotten themselves set up to do so. They were well prepared in this game. I'll give them that. Essentially, they're going to have to skate for another 3 months to be able to do so. But sitting here, reading a lot of different analysts' opinion, and certainly there's a lot of folks that would agree with you, and I'm one of them, Todd, that I don't think they're going to come to the table on their own. Even if we are the lowest cost producer, I think it's a matter of, a political point at this point in time. And so unless we strike a deal, and put something together, I think they're going to go without us for the time being.
Mike Suzzolo, I want to come back to you on these trade issues. I was thinking about this just today and looking up to see where we were as it related to either frameworks or deals or what the tariffs might be on different countries. Of course, there are all countries across the planet have an incoming tariff from the United States. Not many have imposed much in return on the United States as it relates to our exports to them. However, Mexico is still needing to be taken care of. The Canadian Prime Minister was in this week. Those two places are large export destinations for agricultural products. Do you have concerns about either of them?
They're paramount. I mean, let's just be blunt. They have to be there for us next year. And I hope that we understand that in the policymaking arena. I think we do. And I'll reiterate what we talked about several months ago, Todd. I get it and understand why President Trump made this move. His trade policy, economic policy, and foreign policy are all one and the same. And he is bringing other countries to the table to get something done foreign policy-wise through economic trade means. And he's also sincere, and his trade people are sincere about bringing manufacturing back to the United States. And so that this has to be underscored, because that's not going to go away. And as Shane was talking about, China was very well prepared for this. You know, I've been doing a special report about the gold market and Bitcoin and these metals markets against the weakening dollar, and found out that now for 11 months in a row, China has added to their gold reserves. Their central bank has bought gold for 11 months in a row, and their U.S. Treasury holdings as of late July are down 41% from the end of 2015. He came into power in 2012, and he essentially started the Belt and Road Project, and that's what we're seeing right now unfold. So to get to your answers, we have to hold on to Latin, South America. I just saw across the wires on Thursday afternoon the $20 billion bond bailout to Argentina got approved by the Treasury Secretary. That's a direct relation to holding on to Argentina, not losing them to China, like we essentially have lost Brazil. And I'm not saying we lost them. I'm just saying those countries made those decisions to move with China instead of move with us. So the Mexico-Canada issue is paramount. I feel good about Canada. I think there's some headway made. I was actually thinking maybe we'd see something on the ethanol and biofuels by the end of this week because of the good meeting that I had heard they had. Mexico, biggest thing to watch, I think, with Mexico is their drought ending and whether that is going to decrease naturally their need for our corn, because that's been a big part of why they've been buying these past 3 years.
And that wouldn't happen, of course, until next year sometime for the increase of corn, if that was or decrease in corn, I mean, if that was the case.
Yeah, I would guess because of their planting schedule, it probably wouldn't happen until around June at the earliest of next year. And going back to, you know, Brazil and China and your earlier question, I do think China is going to buy probably after the first of the calendar year of 2026. But I also saw that one of their largest pig producers, Muan, came in and said, we're going to slaughter 12 to 14 and a half million piglets instead of 8 to 12 million. The Dalian hog futures was down 6% on that news and hit a new 43-month low. So we still have deflation and culling going on in China too, and that's a reality.
Colin Waters, when folks are just talking at the Corn Growers headquarters there in Bloomington, or if you're talking to NCGA in St. Louis, what conversations are most often happening as it relates to policies?
Well, right now, obviously, trade is kind of top of mind for everybody. We're, you know, talking about Canada and Mexico. The USMCA review is coming up next year, so you know, we're putting together comments to submit to the Federal Register, and you know, obviously, some of the other kind of top line stuff is really biofuels driven. We really peaked in 2019 in terms of ethanol demand in the U.S. And, you know, as cars just, you know, become more efficient and so forth, we're going to probably see this kind of steady erosion. It's not a, you know, I don't expect some kind of cliff, but that market's not growing and, you know, production is, right? So we're out of balance. And that's, I guess, ultimately what, you know, what we're focused on is how can we help drive demand?
President Trump this week mentioned that the USMCA negotiations would be taking place next year. Do you suppose that means that he's kicking the can down the road for both Canada and Mexico?
No, I mean, that's all part of the original deal. Is there's a review set in the language originally. So, you know, there's a few different ways it could go. In theory, it could get blown up and everybody just walks away. I don't really think that that's a realistic possibility. I suspect that we'll see some changes kind of on the margins. There's, you know, for ag, it's absolutely critical. You know, there's no other way to say it. Mexico is by far the largest importer of U.S. corn, and Canada is by far the largest importer of U.S. ethanol. So for the corn sector, it's our neighbors are absolutely critical. But there's a lot of other sectors in the economy that don't necessarily see it that way, right? So, autos and the dairy issues with Canada. It's a pretty long list of folks that are interested in this deal. So I suspect we're gonna hear a lot about the different problems, but we're also gonna hear a lot about the positives of the agreement. And realistically, our supply chains are so integrated, just across the board, regardless of the sector of the economy. I think it's going to be really difficult for us to, walk away from the deal. So I suspect, minor changes and a renewal for, some period of time next year.
Shane Holtorf, when we have talked to you last month, I think, you discussed that producers were rolling forward their old crop into the new crop, what they had left, and maintaining it for corn particularly. Are they also not making sales at this point on a continuing basis?
Yeah, so we did see a lot of bins get cleaned out the last second, and I think, if you look past the last couple of years, you get to late August, early September, and basis gets very desperate. We didn't have that this year. There was a lot of end users that were carrying forward a little bit of production, but by and large, we saw the farmers eventually fold and deliver a good chunk of their production at, the absolute worst time that they could have. But now we're seeing, every place that they can put corn, every place that they can put beans is getting full. They're gonna utilize the storage. Again, to what we've talked a little bit about here is, they probably didn't believe the crop was out there from the start, so they've made plans on how to carry this crop and wait out a little bit of a yield change. On the corn side, probably more so than the beans. But once they shut those doors, they're certainly not going to open them until, they feel that either the basis necessitates that move, or futures does the work. And so I think we're going to see a little bit of that back and forth now, just because they've cleared their bins of the old crop and they're ready to hang tight here for a while.
Finally, Mike Suslow, before I let everybody go for the day, I want to check one of the things that you had put on your list. It was the crude oil and the dollar. What were those relationships to the commodity markets you're thinking about?
Yeah, so far since this phase one Mideast peace plan's been announced, Todd, we've seen a new 2-month high in the US dollar. It's about 3.5% off its lows from last month. And we've also seen a new move back into close to the 5-month low in the crude oil market. And what I think is still occurring, unfortunately, is wheat is trapped by the US dollar and the crude oil price action like that. And that's increasingly trapping the corn market. And what I mean by that is over the medium term, with the wheat corn spread now firmly below a dollar, Asian buyers, and this is coming from Japan, Asian buyers had just gotten comfortable with really ramping up buying corn because it was so cheap. Now we're going to get to a point, if we go too much lower in the wheat market because of the crude and the dollar, we may have to face a situation where Asia goes back to feeding wheat instead of corn. Another one of those things we can't have happen essentially in this kind of a market environment. So we really need to be monitoring that wheat market and the crude and the dollar. And it just goes back to the similar analysis that, to me, it seems like wheat really does hold many of the cards to an ultimate low in this overall grain market.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org, where you can sign up for the December 12 Farm Assets Conference and the Illinois Farm Economic Summit soon enough as well. Check all the details out online at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Shane Holtorf, Colin Waters, and Mike Suslow. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.